Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
We're getting to hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Last verse in the chapter, verse 61. Shinarda vacha iti daicha patir vakyam ditir akarnya shashnusha putra shokam shanat tvaktva Tatve chittam adharyat. Shinarda vacha. Iti daitya pater vakyam. Dittir akarnya shashusha. Putra shokam shanat tvaktva. Tatve chittam adharyat. Shinarda vacha iti daitya pater vakyam ditira karnya shashunasha putra shokam shanat tvaktva tatve chittam adarya. Narda vacha pater vakyam ditir karnya shashish putra shokam shanatvaktva tatve chittam adarya. Srinarda vacha Daitya pater vakyam ditira karnya shashusha putra shokam shanat vakva. Ladies, Shinarda vacha iti daitya pater vakyam Ditira karnya shashasha putra shokam shanatvaktva tatpe chittam adarya. Shinarda vacha iti daitya pater vakya ditira karnya shashasha putra shokam shanatvaktva chittam Srinarda vacha. Srinarda Muni said iti thus daityapate of the king of the demons vakyam of the speech diti the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. Akarnya, hearing. Sashnusha, with the wife of Hiranyaksha. Putra Shokam, the great bereavement for her son. Hiranyaksha. Shanat, immediately. Taktva, giving up. Tatve, in the real philosophy of life. Chittam, heart. Adharyat, engaged. Translation. Sri Narada Muni continued, Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Ushabanu, Hiranyaksha's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. Please repeat. Sri Narada Muni continued. Diti, the mother of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, heard the instructions of Hiranyakashipu along with her daughter-in-law, Rushabhanu, Hiranyaksha's wife. She then forgot her grief over her son's death and thus engaged her mind and attention in understanding the real philosophy of life. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When a relative dies, one certainly becomes very much interested in philosophy. But when the funeral ceremony is over, one again becomes attentive to materialism. Even daityas, who are materialistic persons, sometimes think of philosophy when some relative meets death. The technical term for this attitude of the materialistic person is smashasana vairagya, or detachment in a cemetery or a place of cremation. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, four classes of men receive an understanding of spiritual life and God: artha, the distressed; jigyasu, the inquisitive; artharthi, one who desires material gains; and jnani, one who is searching for knowledge. Especially when one is very much distressed by material conditions, one becomes interested in God. Therefore, Kunti Devi said in her prayers to Krishna that she preferred distress to a happy mood of life. In the material world, one who is happy forgets Krishna or God. But sometimes, if one is actually pious but in distress, he remembers Krishna. Queen Kunti Devi therefore preferred distress because it's an opportunity for remembering Krishna. When Krishna was leaving Kunti Devi for his own country, Kunti Devi regretfully said that she was better off in distress because Krishna was always present, whereas now that the Pandavas were situated in their kingdom, Krishna was going away. For a devotee, distress is an opportunity to remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 7th canto, 2nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. Could we all pray together for the mercy of our divine masters that we might be able to serve nicely the transcendental sound vibration of Bhagavatam by hearing and chanting? Om Jnanatamanandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadandikam Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desatarane Vancha Kapaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Because there's a few new faces in the crowd, my name is Rajendra Nandana Das. I'm an insignificant disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, aspiring servant of You Prabhus. And I know a little bit about this kind of verse and purport. Little bit. A god brother asked me yesterday, do you get nervous before giving class? And in all honesty, yes. If I didn't get nervous before giving class, I'd be in total Maya, because I'd think I had mastery of the Shastra and that I could impress you Prabhus. And, you know, we'd all have a good old Hari Bol, Ki Jai. But we're praying for the descent of transcendental sound vibration. Every single devotee who sits on this Vyasasan, they speak. And they try their best to repeat the words of Srila Prabhupada, of the spiritual master, the previous acharyas. But whether or not the transcendental sound vibration from the spiritual world descends, that's not entirely within... In fact, it's not in our control at all. That's why we ask the mercy of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas before hearing or speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam or anything about devotional service and the devotees. It's the proper mood. We're hearing here how Diti, she got to hear from Aranyakashipu and her lamentation has been dispelled. She's taken it to heart. But I wonder how long it will be before once again she's forgetting that she will die. And she becomes just as absorbed in her affectionate dealings with her son, her remaining son, her grandchildren, affairs of the state, etc. The materialistic persons, sometimes they actually admit, I'm suffering like a dog. Sometimes they understand, I'm so miserable, especially when someone you loved is yanked away from you. Cruelly, death comes and takes away your loved one. Of course, it's a very, very powerful experience of suffering. And it makes one think about one's own mortality. Oh my gosh. Am I going to die? When am I going to die? What have I done? What do I have to do? What am I still trying to achieve? So these thoughts enter in. In the West, they'll say some words praising the dead fellow or gal and say, oh, no worries, they went to heaven. In the East, we understand that the soul is eternal and there's consolation in that. There's no such thing as death. It's an illusion. It's just like me leaving this room when the class is over. I still exist. I've left this room, but I enter into another room. What's the problem? The person who was giving her the consolation, the guidance to steer her out of the lamentation, he certainly doesn't have realization of the eternality of the soul. If he did, he wouldn't even think twice of taking up the battle against Vishnu and controlling this universe. It's like I heard one of our Prabhus say, he's the greatest materialist ever, pages of history. But I guarantee you, when all was said and done, when he realized in the lap of Nrisimhadevi was about to be bifurcated, that it was finished, it all would have seemed like it flashed in a moment. He enjoyed all the pleasures that life has to offer, abundantly, more than we can imagine. And yet, in a moment, it was finished. Life is full of misery. The covering potency of the material energy tries to convince us that we can squeeze some pleasure out of this body through the agency of the mind. Constantly trying to convince all the conditioned souls. And like fools, the conditioned souls run for the pleasure. They serve thankless masters. And time again, they realize, I've been cheated. I wasn't satisfied. I wasn't completely happy. And even if you got some relief, some sense of pleasure, it's all over before you know it. Those who are not pious, then they become angry. They become bitter. In my line of work of sales, I see a lot of people walk in front of me, and many an elderly person looks like this. The wheel of time and the heavy burden of sinful reactions grinds the conditioned soul's futile desire to control and enjoy in this world. But fools that we are, we repeatedly try again and again and again. One of the reasons is because those who are not fortunate, they don't get to hear the transcendental knowledge. You can't blame somebody for being in ignorance. Everyone is born in ignorance, practically without exception. One has to hear from an enlightened person who has the knowledge beyond this world that there is life after death, that you are eternal, that you have a relationship with the Supreme Person. And in His kingdom, in His relationship, one will be fully satisfied and it will never be taken away. One will never be cheated. We all have to come in contact with such a person. Until that happens, the Lord in the heart and His very worthy servant, Maya Devi, is doing her part to pinch us, to kick us. We're all diseased in this world. The body is like a badge. I'm one envious fallen creature. Forget Krishna. I'm trying to be Krishna. Forget you all. I'm trying to walk on your heads to get my pleasures, to accomplish my desired goals. This is going on. This is all that life is. It's a struggle. Those who have knowledge beyond this struggle in ignorance, they sometimes put different names on the diseases that we suffer from. Sometimes we're said to be suffering from amnesia. Sometimes it's said that the heart arteries are clogged, the heart is dirty. One that is a little more graphic, we're actually severe burn victims. This material world is a blazing forest fire, and there is nothing more painful to the nerves of the body than burns, the skin being burned. This is our position, yet we're trying to eke out some pleasure. I mean, how pitiful is it? Even as devotees, I was told yesterday, we heard about devotional service and the different modes of material nature. If one is pious, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, when one is distressed or has any kind of material desire, he will turn to Krishna for the fulfillment of that desire or the relief of distress. And that person is understood to be magnanimous. Not that we hold our nose up if we think we're making advancement, getting some momentum and trying to back shelf our material desires or praying to have them ripped out by the sharp teeth and claws of Nrisimhadeva from our heart. We don't hold our nose up. No. Krishna says they're all magnanimous souls and they are dear to the Lord because there is a reciprocation of affection. At least they're asking the Lord, help me. They're asking the Lord, please fulfill my desire. They're accepting that He is one who can do so. Now, this may be a very immature level of reciprocation with the Lord. It's like the tiny little children. Gimme, gimme. Gimme, gimme. We may remember such a stage of life, or we certainly see it in the younger children. The parent is happy to give as long as they can protect the child and mold the child to help the child mature. Krishna is the same way. He has no problems trying to help us become peaceful in this world. He has a big problem with us foolishly remaining attached to the body and the things of this world. when he fulfills our desires, he does it in such a way that if one is sincere, he'll realize, why did I ask for that? God, there's so much more mercy to be had from the Lord and his devotees. And Srila Prabhupada, in the purports to this section of the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, four people approach him. They're all magnanimous. And he says, among all of them, the best is one who has full knowledge of him and serves him in purity. He asks nothing in return for the service. He simply wants to please Krishna. That person, Krishna says, and Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, is very, very dear to Krishna. We're all dear to Krishna. One who receives his mercy, offering him service for his pleasure, he's very, very dear to the Lord. This child of mine is reciprocating in a way in which I can truly make him happy. This is what is wanted. This is the treasure that the pure devotees are trying to offer us. Whether we accept is the decision we have to make. Because Krishna doesn't force anybody to serve him. The pure devotees, they don't force us to give up all other desires, foolish, childish desires, and simply surrender to Guru and Krishna. They don't force. They encourage best they can. On our part, we have to develop the ardent desire, a prayer, please, let me have the association of your transcendental messenger and let me hear the transcendental sound vibration of the spiritual knowledge of devotional service. This should be our highest desire in life, to constantly hear from the pure devotees who are not of this world, who don't have desires for anything of this world. The spiritual master does not come down here to establish a world where there is no pain. You can't do it. We're in Devi Dham. This is her kingdom. And Krishna has made it so that there will always be suffering as long as you identify with the body and mind. You can't get away from that. Unless you surrender to the transcendental message. And the only way that the transcendental message is fully revealed to one is if you realize nothing else is of any importance. Acceptance of, service to, and sharing of the transcendental message is what devotees do. That's what's being offered to us. If we don't have that singular focus of desire in our life, then we can choose one of the modes we're comfortable in, stay limited by that glass ceiling that we set upon ourselves. I'm happy running around, very active, doing so many things and acquiring position and recognition. Or being happy that, wow, the relief of that heavy burden of sinful reactions, it's not there. Guru has so kindly removed so much of it from my shoulders. I'm peaceful getting a garland, honoring some maha, getting to give a class sometime, having a nice situation in Mayapur Dham. But the mood in which you perform the services that we do perform, are we doing it to please Guru and Krishna? Or are we really still influenced by that selfishness of, I'm trying to enjoy here? There's a big difference. It's two opposite sides of the coin. Am I honoring the garland so that I can be purified? Am I honoring the Mahapashadam so that I can show that I'm simply the insignificant servant of the Lord, totally dependent upon His mercy? Anything and everything we do, is it for His pleasure, for the pleasure of Guru and Vaishnava? If it's not, there's work to be done in our consciousness, in our heart. The spiritual master, he doesn't hedge words. He doesn't... His motive is not to flatter us or simply to make us feel good about ourselves. Sometimes the spiritual master can speak very bitter words, very sharp words. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that he will sometimes be very insolent in his delivery of the transcendental message. And I had to look up insolent, dictionary key. And it means one who is disrespectfully rude or arrogant. Now that's kind of unusual to hear that the spiritual master might be rude or arrogant. He's not. He's a personification of mercy. But because of our attachment to the false ego, some false identity of being something or someone that we're not, we take it that sometimes he will insult us. Who is he? What is he saying? Come on. And I've even heard God brothers, I'll put it in the singular, I've heard a God brother who take on the service of a Diksha Guru say, most of my disciples, they don't really want to be told what to do. They'd rather just be comforted, a little encouraged. And when I heard that, I was shocked. Because that's not the business of guru and it's not the business of disciple. Somewhere there's cheating going on in such reciprocation. Let's put the blame at the feet of the disciple because that's the role that most of us play. We are disciples. We're not serving in the capacity of guru, at least not in Diksha Guru. There's no reason to take up the relationship of a disciple with the spiritual master if you don't want to get out of this world to eternally serve Krishna. You don't need it. You want to be comfortable in this world? You can chant Hare Krishna. You can hang out with the devotees. And life can be kicked back fairly smooth and easy. No problem. But the guru doesn't want to offer that. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said there were many followers of Gaurakishore Das Babaji who thought they were very intimate with Babaji Maharaj and that they were the recipients of his full mercy. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said they were fools, totally cheated, because they were not given the name of Krishna nor the empowerment to spread the names of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada simply wants to give us devotional service, primarily through the Yuga Dharma of chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Which brings us to the last half of the purport. Everyone is distressed in this world if they're conscious. Those who are the lowest of the ignorant, hog-like men, they may not realize they're suffering. In their intoxicated bewilderment, they may think, life is good in the stupor. Ignorance is bliss. Or the other person is the liberated souls. In between, everybody else is suffering. And we hear Kunti Devi, when her sufferings, her trials and tribulations, those of her and her son ended, Krishna was leaving her. And so she prayed, please bring them back on. What did they go through? They were protected from a poison cake, from a great fire, the house of Shalak, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile, from the battle where great generals fought. And last but not least, they saved the remaining heir that was to be born from Uttara, saved him from the Brahmastra thrown by Ashvatthama. And now they're safely able to reign the kingdom. And you're going. Don't leave. put us in difficulty if it means you'll stay with us, always here to protect us. And I've heard many a devotee give what I think is a misleading explanation of this verse. We're not meant to try and imitate Queen Kunti. Life is hard enough without praying for miseries. She's a pure Vaishnavi. For her, the suffering of a moment's absence from Krishna is worse than any fire, any poison, any suffering of this body and mind. They don't identify with themselves as the body and mind. They're the servants of Krishna. They love Krishna. For one who loves Krishna, when they're put into difficulty, basically it's so that you and I, the neophytes, can understand how much they are determined to serve Krishna because of their love for Krishna. Nothing stops the service of a lover of Krishna. We see that in one of our Prabhus right here, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami. What stops him? Nothing can stop pure devotional service. So we're not meant to pray. Krishna can give if we're foolish enough to ask for that. Actually, one of our godbrothers, Bhaktatirtha Swami, His Holiness Bhaktatirtha Swami, he prayed to take on sufferings, the sins of this movement, to relieve the weight that was bearing down so that we could get beyond petty selfishness and actually care for each other. The Brahmins, the elderly, the women, the children. Actually care, knowing that pleases Krishna. He prayed for it and Krishna fulfilled his desire. If we're not on that level, we shouldn't try to imitate these exalted souls. But when distress comes, it's an opportunity for us to think of Krishna, to have the heart purified, to break the attachment, the strong, glued, false ego we have stuck to us. To break it. I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. And if we give up the weakness of heart that plagues the neophyte devotee, we won't have difficulty in advancing deeper and deeper in those realizations. What are the weaknesses? That we identify with this material world. That it's our home, that we belong to it. That we are this body. And because of that, we become attached to anything and everything that we can get our hands on. Those two aspects, those weaknesses, have to be given up. And it's impossible to give it up on our own. We have to constantly be hearing the transcendental message of the spiritual world. The message of service to Krishna. Shushushu Shadadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Shan Mahat Savya Vipra Punya Tirtha Nishavana. Serving the Vaishnavas, that helps us develop the desire to hear the transcendental message. Not in one ear and out the other, but that transcendental vibration can enter the ears, descend into the heart, and cleanse it all away. All the misgivings, all the attachments, foolish, illusory attachments that we've held since time immemorial. We don't have to utilize any other sense, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, to prove the validity of transcendental sound vibration. That is necessary when hearing mundane sound vibration about things of this world. Show me so I can believe it. Let me touch it. Let me smell it. Let me taste it. Oh, yes, I believe this. But this transcendental sound vibration simply has to be heard with a submissive service attitude at the feet of one who is qualified to deliver the descent of the transcendental sound vibration. The proof that it is transcendental is that it cleanses the heart. It is life-changing. And as long as we keep the prayerful desire that I want my heart to soften, I want to surrender to Guru and Krishna, as long as we keep that as a priority, then the transcendental message, the holy names of the Lord, the association of the Vaishnavas,
they will do everything for us. There's no inevity in the transcendental sound vibration. Any difficulties, any challenges that we have can immediately be washed away. Srila Prabhupada said, with the touch, just the touch of my toe, I can break the biggest boulder of obstacles from the life of any sincere devotee. We have to ask ourselves, what are we waiting for? We are graced to have the association of so many wonderful devotees. That is the gift of Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and his representatives. Among the Vaishnavas, you will find different levels of desire for surrendering to Krishna and the devotees of the Lord. You should always aspire, always stay attentive to where you hear the most advanced realizations coming from those who have given up any and all other desires except surrendering to pleasingly serving Krishna. That is the best association. And actually, it's more available than one might think. But if one does not have the prayerful, sincere desire that I want to surrender to Krishna, I want to please Krishna. If one doesn't stay focused in that, you may have a Paramahamsa sitting right next to you or giving class, and you don't have a clue. Or because of your lack of submission, lack of desire to become Krishna conscious, the transcendental sound vibration just washes right over you in one ear and out the other, and you cheat yourself. As I said, Krishna is not going to force us to surrender completely. He's patient. He's not deserting us. Any credit that comes to our account by having pleased his devotee, it's eternal. And I do want to end on a positive note, because we're serving, all of us are Prabhupada Anugas, and there are pure Vaishnavas who are his followers and who are his servants. They are his pure representatives. There's several. And we have the opportunity to take advantage of that. And if we get the mercy of the Vaishnava, Krishna is controlled by the pure Vaishnavas. He submits himself to trying to please them, to fulfill their desires. The pure Vaishnavas, they know Krishna wants us all to come back to him so that we can be happy in giving our lives to him, to pleasing him. They know that, and they sacrifice what to us looks like inconceivable lengths. But for a pure devotee who loves Krishna, there's nothing too big a price. There's no price too big to pay for trying to spread Krishna's glories, in trying to please Krishna, in trying to help us conditioned souls come back to Krishna. So if we get their mercy, like Srila Prabhupada says in the fourth canto, anyone who's following the instructions of the spiritual master, that's tantamount to seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it's just a matter of time, not that long, before we will be graced with that eternal engagement of serving and pleasing Krishna. We just have to want and act upon that desire. Are there any questions or comments? I should stop before it gets too late. Yes, my friend. Is there a microphone for him? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, before I ask question, I have a personal question. Before I ask the question, please don't mind. Like, are you yourself initiating in ISKCON?
Can anybody understand? It's kind of reverberate.
No,
I'm not.
Please don't mind. I ask a very different type of question. Like, you were so confident in saying that, you were mentioning that one of the Diksha Gurus, he is saying that his disciples, one of the Diksha Gurus,
yes,
he is saying that his disciples are confident to take their own decisions.
The disciples are
confident to take their own decisions.
I didn't use those words.
No. Yeah.
But it's in essence another way of saying what I said. They don't really want to be instructed, told what to do. They just want to be encouraged, comforted, basically.
Yeah. So like if like you are correcting somebody who is like already a Bhiksha Guru, there are so many different situations. It like amounts to like pointing a finger.
There are so many situations.
Different situations, different ways of different gurus handle do their services as a guru in different ways.
Yes.
So it almost feels like pointing a finger.
I did not mention any names.
Yeah.
I talked philosophy. Srila Prabhupada, just the one-liner is, one does not accept a spiritual master as a fashion. He's not someone we instruct, we want to control. We are eternally the servant of a bona fide spiritual master. So yes, I will stand by what I said. So you have a question about that? A doubt?
Yeah, I mean, then you would yourself be initiating, right? Like if you...
No, I'm a fool. I'm an idiot. And there's a joke that anybody who would want to join this club, any club that would invite me to join, I don't want to be a member of that club. Groucho Marx, or anyone who cares. So you don't want to be a disciple of a fool like me. No one should. But it's a gradual process. The desire should be there. It should be cultivated that we want to become a servant of the message of our spiritual master. And gradual process doesn't mean that we hold on to the attachments that we have. Gradual process means I surrender completely to my Lord, to my spiritual master. And he can take as long or as short as he wishes to give me the mercy. I'm going to keep wanting, keep praying, keep acting in a way to show my sincerity. That's the real worthy meaning of it's a gradual process. So someday, the mercy will be there. Yes, Prabhu? Can you hand him the...
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you very much for your wonderful class. Thank you very much for your wonderful class. So you were talking... about prayers, how we should pray to the Lord. You were given the example of Bhakti Kirtan Swami. So my question is, to pray...
Whose example did I give?
Bhakti Kirtan Swami.
Queen Kunti?
You did Bhakti Kirtan Swami, you mentioned.
Yes, thank you.
So my question is, how potent is to pray here in the Dham?
Oh my goodness.
Because I had many devotees asking me, please, Acharya, pray for me, pray for me. Go to this deity and pray for me, pray for me. So I have this conversation with one devotee that I said, you know, Prabhu, I'm going to pray to the Lord that he will help you to don't do this because he has some attachments to something. And then he said, no, please, pray for anything, but not for that. And I said, Prabhu, but... do you want to be a pure devotee? He said, yes, I want to be a pure devotee. But please don't pray for that. You got a promise to me, don't pray for that. And then I said, you know, Krishna is very tricky. And I want to pray here, you know, even you want it or you don't want it, I want to pray to the Lord for that. So my question is, I am very neophyte, I don't have any qualification, but if I pray to the Lord to help my friends, if that helps,
the devotee naturally feels, if he's in proper consciousness, that who is he to, you know, call upon the Lord or have the influence upon the Lord to fulfill the prayer that I say. That's proper consciousness. And so any prayer offered to the Lord It's done with the, it goes without saying, if you so desire. If you so desire, my Lord, you know the big picture. But in terms of praying for others that they come to the platform of pure devotional service, that's the prayer of Prahlad Maharaj in the fifth canto. He said, please pacify all these envious conditioned souls by giving them devotional service. We're diseased. Even amongst devotees, we are, you know, we still have a little fever. My God, I didn't realize you're that hot. We still have some material attachments. The fever has to be lowered. We have to come to this, to the reality of surrendering completely to the Lord. And anyone who prays in that fashion, the Lord's happy to hear that prayer. That's what He's trying to accomplish through everything. Through this international society, through Srila Prabhupada, through everything. He's just trying to bring us back home in pure, loving, devotional service. So you don't have to put your friend in anxiety if he doesn't want to hear that, but what does he know what you pray with your hands folded, quietly standing before Nisingadeva or Panchatattva or Radhamadava? You know, that's a very good prayer. I would encourage you in that way. With the humility that knowing, no, I'm not blessing, I'm simply asking the Lord to bless. I'm asking the Acharyas to bless. The Lord wants to hear that. He wants to see us. That's a manifestation of growing in Krishna consciousness. Yes, my friend?
Thank you. Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class, even though I came a bit later. So,
is it
please.
The fans, is it me, or is it the speakers?
Hari Hari. Yes, so please, thank you very much. My question is that actually you mentioned the example of Queen Kunti, as she is a pure Vaishnavi and she prays for anxieties in a manner of that she doesn't want to be separated from Krishna in any way.
Yes.
So since I joined the movement, I find it quite popular that among devotees they often say, you know, I'm so fallen, you know, I'm the worst, you know, and this is some...
Okay, stop. What's he said so far? Yes, okay.
Yes, I find it often. Sometimes I speak to devotees and I give them some compliments and then devotees often they say, like, you know, I'm so fallen, I'm the worst, you know, and this is...
Okay.
To be the symptoms of like Uttama Adhikari, quite pure devotee. So I thought, you know, well, I also try to, you know, like, you know, humble myself in sometimes like this, but then I thought it's wrong. So, like...
Stop.
Okay.
Okay. Now put a question, because the sound vibration makes it difficult.
Okay, excuse me. So what is your opinion, you know, like, how should we stay humble but not imitate the pure devotees in the same time?
How should we stay humble and...
And not imitate the pure devotees in the same time.
Not imitate
the pure devotees in the same time.
That's a very nice question. Anything that we have, anything that we've done, any, you know, whoever we are in devotional service is simply mercy. It's a gift of Guru and Krishna. If one has that awareness and stays fixed in it, it is a form of the six loving exchanges to appreciate that the devotee was expressing appreciation of you or something you've done or some qualities you possessed. If you take the credit yourself, then that's the worst thing you can do is just say, ah, you're welcome. Hari Bol. And in that sense, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said that our flatterers are our worst enemies. Because as we advance, the more we realize how insignificant and disqualified we are, how merciful the Guru and Vaishnavas and Krishna are in accepting whatever we're trying to offer. The pure devotees, they may or may not, you know, verbalize you're welcome. It's not the business of guru to always be, you know, inflating the false ego of the disciple by speaking flattering words, pleasing words. Everyone's an individual, and everyone has their moods and the way in which they're cultivating their relationship with the Lord and the devotees. It has taken me a long time to come to some appreciation that I'm an idiot and that whatever I do and that has any positive effect on others is just the causeless mercy of my spiritual master and my Prabhus. And so I can at this time say thank you, because I do want to cultivate a relationship, a friendship, of service with anybody who would have me do so. So we try to encourage each other. And if somebody doesn't want to hear their praises, then why force it upon them unless it's obligatory as it is on behalf of the in regards to the spiritual master or someone who is imparting transcendental knowledge to us, guiding us, helping us. Does that shed some light on the matter?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for the wonderful class. And
Srila
Prabhupada
ki, but you are welcome.
For your exemplary humility.
I think that's about all we're going to have. If anybody has a burning question or would like to share any of your realizations with me, we'll end now, and I'm here for a short time. Last thing I will say, my wife and I leave tomorrow. For about 3 months, you've sustained us. You've inspired us, and we beg that you will think kindly of us despite our shortcomings and in any way that we've discouraged you or insulted you or offended you. Please pray that we can stay focused in the way in which we've aspired here in the Dham when we go back home. I look forward to seeing you again if Krishna will be so kind. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Gaura Premanandi. Hare Krishna.